How do you see right now the current face of the conflict? As we know, Netanyahu badly wants to attack Hezbollah, and it doesn't seem that Biden can do anything about it.
Well, there's a lot of gaslighting going on, and I guess the cruder term for gaslighting is you're blowing smoke up someone's ass, okay? And here's the gaslighting that Netanyahu said, we're going to stay in Gaza until we defeat Hamas. Okay, good. We're going at it 8 months now. How's that working out? Well, the general Halevi says, we can't defeat Hamas. Hamas is an idea. It can't be defeated. Militarily, we can't defeat it. What? So you're right there, division between the civilian side and the military side. And Netanyahu has not taken his foot off the gas, trying to keep them pressing forward, except the military is saying, we're running out of men. Our soldiers are exhausted. We don't have enough ammunition, despite everything the United States is pouring in there. And, even though Israel claims that it's killed 14,000 Hamas, who knows if that's, how do you know they're Hamas? It's not like these guys are wearing uniforms or carrying weapons out in public and you're blowing them up and you can count them that way. They decimate an entire city block with civilians and go, oh, I guess there was, 90% of that was Hamas, including the children, the babies, the women. So God knows how many Hamas fighters they've killed, but what we do know is Hamas is still firing rockets, they're still firing mortars, they're still firing anti-tank guided missiles, they're still setting mines, they're still conducting ambushes. And the Israelis are paying a price, a growing price, that is affecting their ability to operate. And then on to top it off, you've got Netanyahu insisting, oh yeah, we're going to go, we are going into southern Lebanon. We're going to push the Hezbollah back past the Litani River. We're going to crush them. We're going to defeat them. They're going to take a devastating blow like they've never had. And then an objective military analyst comes in and says, okay, time out. Let me see if I got this straight. You've been fighting with your entire army for 8 months in Gaza against a bunch of guys who are basically not an organized military unit. They're guerrilla fighters. They've got a loose chain of command. They're not concentrated in any one area, and they're pretty well dug in, but they don't have, sophisticated rockets, missiles, and drones. And they were not combat trained. And after 8 months, you can't defeat those. But you're now going to launch a ground offensive into southern Lebanon against a 100,000 man army of Hezbollah fighters who are combat veterans who've been fighting in Syria over the last 10 years, who are organized into disciplined military units with officers and non-commissioned officers and enlisted personnel who are in entrenched positions that are well fortified, well bunkered, that can withstand aerial bombardment, including with fixed wing aircraft as well as with artillery, that have sophisticated missiles and rockets that once they unleash them, they can shell and hit parts of Israel that never, never have suffered any kind of devastating attacks in the past. And on top of it, this unit has already a reputation. They defeated you once in 2006, only now they're bigger, better, stronger. And you're going to attack them with a military that you're claiming is tired, worn out, and underarmed? Do the math for me on that, please. Doesn't make sense. Doesn't add up. If you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said, yeah, it was certainly Israel's going to go into the southern Lebanon. But since seeing the military side of the Israeli military push back on this, I don't think they're going to do it. Not only they may want to do it, but they can't do it. Yeah, they've got fixed wing aircraft that can fly in and just bomb the hell out of Hezbollah positions. But we've seen through the last 80, 90 years of warfare, the United States just bombed the hell out of Iwo Jima with fixed-wing aircraft and with battleships hurling, shells the size of automobiles onto Iwo Jima. And when the Marines landed, guess what? Out come all the Japanese. They were still alive, and they killed a vast number, over almost 4,000 Marines. I think Israel, if they try to pull this off, will face a humiliating defeat. And then the very question of Israel's survival comes in, is raised. So, you got a real split now in Israel between the military side and the civilian side. The civilians are crazy. The military apparently has not lost all of its sanity. They recognize we can't keep doing this.
We've learned that Hezbollah, in response to killing one of its commanders, just attacked Israel with 200 rockets and 20 drones. And Larry, why they're doing this? What's the strategy behind killing these commanders? Because we know that they're going to be replaced, and that doesn't make any sort of changes.
Well, it's the assumption, the key man theory, that you're making the Israel has made the false assumption that Hezbollah as an organization is dependent upon one, two, three, four, five guys. But any good military organization, no matter what the talent of the commander, unless they have developed the leadership cadres below, yeah, you can weaken and destroy that organization, but that's not Hezbollah. Hezbollah has got, let's call them faithful fighters up and down through the ranks. And so, you kill one. The biggest danger in that is you kill one. He may have been somewhat of a moderate. He may have been encouraging restraint. No, we shouldn't attack. We shouldn't do this. You bring in somebody who's more radical, saying, "Oh hell yes! No, let's go see how many Israelis we can kill." It's like those who want to get rid of Vladimir Putin in Russia. If you get rid of Vladimir, replace him with Medvedev. Holy smokes! Medvedev's more of a hothead than Putin. Medvedev, man, he could hit the nuclear button quick. So it's like, this Israeli, it's a foolish Israeli strategy, in my view.
And if Larry, let's assume at the end of the day, Netanyahu decides to go fight in Hezbollah in the southern part of Lebanon, if they come to a point that they're losing, what would be the reaction on the part of the United States?
Well, the United States should try to intervene, but there's little the United States could do. It doesn't have enough troops to deploy and put in there. It could deploy ships offshore and try to shell, send missiles into the Bekaa Valley. We did that once before, 40 years ago now. How'd that turn out? Not too well. The bit of a debacle. Israel would be in a desperate situation. And let's not forget, Iran has already put Israel on notice. Hey, you invade southern Lebanon, we're coming in. All the different groups we support, they're going to get offshore support. They'll be attacking you too. So that this could really dramatically expand the war. And again, look at what the United States has been unable to do with the Houthis in Yemen. We can't defeat the Houthis, but yeah, we're going to defeat Hezbollah. Hezbollah is far more capable and competent than the Houthi military. Absolutely. So we just, one of these days we're going to get a good sharp dose of reality, and that's going to wake us up out of our fantasies. Right now, we indulge these fantasies that we're the biggest, we're the best, we're the strongest, nobody can beat us. Yeah, just wait. Because if America keeps up with that attitude, it's going to find out that it's not the biggest, the best, the strongest, and it's going to get beat.
You know, any time that we're talking about the conflict, we can think of this conflict going nuclear. And if
Yeah.
Israel uses those nuclear bombs, and is that going to be a game changer, or is it going to get worse even?
Well, it'd be a game changer because it would make things worse for Israel. Pakistan has already told Turkey, hey, if Israel uses nukes, we got you covered. You can use ours. It gets to the question of, this is sort of what Israel's thinking, like those Hollywood movie producers, where they've got the nuclear weapon that ends everything, and then you start over, and the one side wins and one side loses. This won't be like a Hollywood movie. If Israel decides to try to use a nuclear weapon or two tactical nukes in southern Lebanon, it is going to unleash a reaction against Israel that I don't think Israel can survive. And because it will not just be the use of a nuke against these Muslim people, which up to this point, Muslim scholars have discouraged the use of nuclear weapons. I think will be it will ignite like a chain reaction throughout the Arab and Muslim world that will lead to the destruction of Israel. So if Israel uses that kind of weapon to save itself, it will be actually sowing its own seeds of destruction. I interviewed a new friend. Her name is Safar Zainab Safars, or Zainab's her first name. And she's a journalist in Lebanon, a devout Muslim. She was actually born in Iraq, raised in Lebanon, attended an evangelical Christian school in Lebanon. But she sort of represents the mindset. She's not Palestinian. She's actually an Iraqi Muslim that has now very much identified with what the Palestinians are experiencing. And her son, who is born in Lebanon, so he's Lebanese by birth, is down in South, he's only 13, but he's in South Lebanon, vulnerable to these Israeli attacks. So I said that if Israel chooses to do something so heinous in that regard, in a bid to save itself, it's going to end up destroying itself, I believe. I could be wrong, wouldn't be the first time, but I don't see the rest of the world then laying down and saying, okay, yeah, Israel, you can use nukes whenever, wherever you want. Iran, I'm sure, would retaliate at that point too, just with conventional ballistic missiles. But this time, they're not going to coordinate with the United States in advance. They're going to hit Iran out of the blue and will destroy much of Israel's military infrastructure.
Did you see that video of Ben-Gvir suggesting that Palestinian prisoners must be shot in the head? It's
Yeah.
unbelievable the way he's talking about.
It's deja vu all over again. It's like watching Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS, encouraging his boys to kill as many of those Jews as possible. Same thing. Only now we got the Jew behaving like a Nazi.
The differences that we're witnessing right now, before the conflict and right now, we had Syria out of the Arab League and
Yeah.
was invited, and right now is part of Arab League. And recently, just 2 days ago, the Arab League dropped Hezbollah terrorist designation that they were
Yeah.
recognizing as terrorists. Right now, they're saying no, it's not terrorist anymore for us.
Right,
And
right.
these are huge changes that are happening right now in the Middle East.
Yeah, big time.
And this conflict is simply unifying Shia, Sunni, and all of them together.
In fact, I asked Zainab the question about So I said, do you consider yourself a Shia or a Sunni? And her answer was interesting. She goes, I consider myself a Muslim. I don't get into the Sunni Shia differences. And I think particularly among a lot of younger Muslims now, with the exception of those who are caught up in the ISIS mentality, that the religious differences that they perceive separating them as Shia versus Sunni have been minimized. And exactly as you said, that what's being done to the Palestinian people, because it's not just Muslims that are being attacked, they're Christians as well. But what's happening to the Palestinians is so outrageous, so sickening, so extreme, that people are setting aside their religious differences to join together, try to oppose Israel.
It seems that they're forcing Joe Biden to get out of the race. And even big donors of the Democratic Party, they're asking Joe Biden to get out of the race. And do you think at the end of the day, they're going to be successful in their attempts to just remove Joe Biden and replace him with someone else?
I think that Biden will be forced to resign, and Kamala Harris will be given the task of trying to win the election in November. I said there is a lot of delusional thinking going on. The Democrats, some Democrats are betting heavily on Michelle Obama being stepping in. Oh, boy, forget Michelle. She'd easily beat Trump. Nonsense. You know, Michelle Obama couldn't attract an audience on Netflix. In contrast to Trump, who always got big ratings on network television. But that's the thinking of these Democrats. A lot of magical thinking on their part. But they've been, I think, too cute by half. They spent so much time trying to discredit and destroy Donald Trump that they've actually built Donald Trump up. They've made him into a martyr. You know, here they are trying to lock up Donald Trump, and Trump's appealing to all these black guys who feel like they are unfairly oppressed and attacked by the police and locked up for no good reason either. And Trump can literally identify with them. I bet you Trump's sort of secretly hoping they lock him up in jail for a bit. Because that way he gets to be an everyman. Hey, the system, I understand what it means when you say the system's out of control, because it came after me. And the Democrats are just so damn arrogant. So that's the same group that's insisting, oh yeah, we can get somebody else to replace Joe Biden. Yeah, maybe they can. Biden so far is uncooperative. It shows that they're trying to keep Biden in the fight for whatever reason.
But who would be better for Netanyahu at the end of the day?
Probably Trump. Because the Republicans could care less about the attracting Palestinian voters and Muslim voters in the United States. That's one of the things Biden's struggling with. He's got to keep his Jewish donors happy, but he wants to cater to the Palestinian side, and he can't do both. So he's very much divided.
But if, Larry, the way that the conflict is growing and is developing right now in the Middle East, do you think that at the end of the day, for these policymakers in the United States, they know how dependent Israel is on the countries that are locating in that region? And do they really consider just forcing Netanyahu to understand the reality of Israel today?
Oh, no, they can't. You can't force Netanyahu's running the show. He owns the U.S. Congress. He's all about protecting himself and his legacy. He could give two hangs what U.S. interests are in the region. He's going to do what he can to first protect himself and then maybe protect Israel. But already he's in the process of wanting to sacrifice Israel for his own political ambitions. And it's not inconsequential. We should not discount the importance of this visible split between the military and the politicians. Because the military still, they got the guns. And they're acknowledging that their soldiers are running into mental suffering that they're not able to cope with. You know, one of the things that, you know, a lot of people that, you know, with respect to the Holocaust in World War II, when the Nazi, the Einsatzgruppen went in following the initial invasion and were rounding up Jews and marching them off the pits like they did in September of 41 in Babi Yar, where, tens of thousands of Jews were shot and killed. What the German army discovered was that the Wehrmacht, that these soldiers were mentally damaged, injured by it. Yeah, there were some soldiers who could shoot a kid, shoot a woman, a young woman, pretty young woman, no problem. They were sadists. But a large number of the German soldiers actually reportedly still had an ember of humanity burning in their souls. And they were haunted by what they did. Several came back, committed suicide, several suffered mental breakdowns. And so the German officer corps, that's what led them to say, hey, we got to find a different, we can't keep doing this. And that's why they came up with using gas. And ultimately, Zyklon B is a quick way to kill a large number of Jews. But because they wanted to get their soldiers out of the personal job of destroying the lives of these civilians. Well, that's what Israeli soldiers have been doing in Gaza and in the West Bank. And it's inflicting a psychological toll on the Israelis. And they got a growing number of, let's call them mentally wounded, that are inhabiting hospitals and capable of continuing to serve militarily, even though physically they're fine. So this inhuman treatment of the Palestinians still finds that there are still some Israeli soldiers with a soul and with a conscience, and that at the end may be the saving grace for the Palestinians.
Just to wrap up this session, we know that Netanyahu would love to leave a great legacy behind when he's leaving the office in Israel. But in your opinion, what would be his legacy for Israel?
He's a murderous butcher. That he's the man that brought Israel to an end. He's the man that destroyed Israel's ability to continue as an independent nation. I think that's very much a likely legacy for him.